The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, you know, on this show, we've been talking a lot about predictions for the economy, the real estate market, all these financial things that are you know, affecting us as an investor. And one of those areas, of course, is just the impending market correction that looks likely to come. I can't say if it's going to or not, but it looks very likely. This gentleman that we're going to have on is somebody who is very skilled at dealing with those types of situations. His name is Todd Toback, and he has 19 years of real estate investing experience, specializing in acquiring real estate assets below market value. Also a skill we really want to have, right? He has flipped over 1,000 plus single family residences, duplexes, triplexes, and other types of properties. During his tenure as a real estate investor, he has held a small portfolio of single family homes, multi-units, mobile home parks, and has extensive experience in lease negotiation. Todd is the creator of the No Limits Sales System, where he has trained solopreneurs and large teams to double and then double profits again just by making a few small tweaks. He specializes in teaching others the art of talking to motivated sellers. He also teaches next-level wholesaling, teaching solopreneurs how to break free of the bondage of the one-man show by building highly effective teams that produce revenue. In addition, he teaches how to purchase income-producing real estate and how to build long-term wealth while drastically decreasing your working hours. Todd is also published in the Wall Street Journal and USA Today on hiring and training salespeople. Well, Todd, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Well, thank you, Bill. Excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. You're a neighbor here, a little bit south of me here in Orange County in San Diego. We're enjoying some great sunshine today. How are you down there in San Diego?
Same here. We're good. I'm sorry if you're listening to this and you're someplace else.
Well, Todd, we would really love to just kind of hear your background, where you're from, and how you got into this world of real estate.
Sure. So originally, I'm from Long Beach, New York, and I went to college in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I don't know if you know anything about Western Michigan, but it snowed every day there from October pretty much through May. And so back in 2001, I just said, enough is enough. I had $300 in my pocket, had my 11-year-old Labrador Retriever in my car, and I drove back to San Diego, California, looking for the sun and the sand and real estate freedom. And actually, I didn't know it was real estate freedom at the time, but I was just looking to do what I wanted. And really, I didn't feel like getting a real job at the time. And so I got out here and I just saw how expensive it was. And so, you know, that was a defining moment for me in that I'm like, okay, I'm out on my own. And that was like the first have to moment where I said, okay, I've got to get serious. And so I had made a decision to get a job in pharmaceutical sales. Someone had told me about how it was a great opportunity to learn and sell, and you could take the skill and you know, use it for anything. And I was really shy and really introverted. I was just really awkward when I was, you know, in large groups of people. And so my dad and everyone's like, hey, this would be great. And so long story short, I committed to that, and I hung around these medical buildings waiting for the drug reps to come in. And as they came in, and drug reps are basically the liaison between the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors. And so I went there and I found a rep and I said, hey, I'm really looking to, you know, do what you do. And he got me face to face with a manager at Pfizer, which I don't know how this happened, but I got a job selling Viagra in the heyday.
Oh, gee.
And it was a total blast, right? I learned so much, and I had a great mentor at Pfizer. His name was Derek. And I credit Derek he basically taught me pretty much everything I know about selling, right? He hired me when I couldn't get two words out of my mouth, but he saw something that I was hungry and willing to put in the work and learning to develop my craft. And, you know, one of the questions he asked me during my interview was, tell me about something that you wanted to learn that when you first started, you were extremely uncomfortable, but then you applied yourself to it and then excelled later in life. And I remember that question, and I think he was asking it for me because he wanted to know my desire and commitment to learn how to sell. You know, it was interesting. I was there for a couple of years, and I soaked everything I could from Derek, but I had this defining moment, right? And I don't know if you're listening to this. Maybe you are in your 50s or 60s, and you know, you're thinking, okay, I want to make more money, or, you know, I haven't done enough to this point. And so I think everyone has to have that moment where they take I should, I might, I will to I'm doing and I did, right? And so this moment I'm about to tell you, that was that moment for me, right? Where it shifted my thermostat saying I'm not comfortable here, right? And it threw me towards action. So in 2002, I actually had referred a friend to Pfizer who was a colleague of mine, and he got hired by the pharmaceutical company that I was working at. Now, that was really neat, but what happened was they brought him in $10,000 higher than I was, Bill, right? And I was already working there for a year or two, right? Oh, so you can imagine that I was like, whoa, what the heck? You know, what happened here? So I go to Derek and I'm like, you know, Derek, you know, I just referred Michael. You guys just hired him and you brought him in at a $10,000 base salary higher than me. And so he's like, I know, you know, I had a feeling that this was going to happen. And he kind of came around, you know, alongside me and put his arm around me. And he's like, listen, you know, this is just the way it is. And I'm like, Derek, I need a $20,000 raise, like now. You know, and it was interesting because I was, you know, really young and cocky. And he's like, I'm going to protect you. I'm like, he's like, this is going to sound really arrogant. And, you know, this is just not the way the corporate world works. And he was right, right? That's not the way the corporate world works. It was a big, you know, a really, really big company. If I would have asked for a 20K raise, I wouldn't have gotten it. But this was my moment. And so if you're listening to this, I would ask you to find your moment. I was frustrated. I was angry. Everything inside me was stirred up, Bill. And I was driving on the 101 freeway By the way, he was right in Irvine, right off Jamboree.
Close to me.
And so I was drove home from a face-to-face meeting there and passed the 101 over to Oxnard. And I saw Barnes & Noble's bookstore on the right-hand side. I went over three lanes of traffic. And I remember specifically some guy giving me the finger as I was trying to get off the exit. Got into Barnes & Noble's, went right to the real estate section. I don't know why. Picked up the book, Multiple Streams of Income. Read the whole book in 2 days. I was fired up. And one of the things in this book, it said, you have to find motivated sellers. And the way to do that is to find out-of-state owners, people who live out of the area, who own real estate where you live. And so I went back, and this is really going to be an old dog thing here, Bill, is that they did not, you know, you couldn't pull data like you can pull now. I actually had to go down to the county recorder's office and talk to the lady at the front desk. I brought her some donuts and some bagels, and she helped me manually go through the condo complex that I was living in Carpinteria, California. And I found like 64 names of people who lived out of state. I handwrote them. They didn't have like any like photocopy machines in the office, or they weren't willing to do it. I sent out 64 letters. I prayed over the letters. I was like, Lord, just give me one motivated seller. I got one phone call from somebody. I met the husband and wife face to face. They were from out of the area, and I had no idea what I was doing. Didn't have the contract, but I had enough sense to lock it up. And it was a condo worth about $380,000, and they agreed to sell it to me for $280,000.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
So there's a little bit more to the story. So okay. I didn't have any money at the time, right? I was only working for a year. Didn't really have the credit. And so I called up my regular brother, my blood brothers. I asked my dad, I asked my friends, and the first three people said no. But then I called up my brother-in-law, and I showed him the property, and he's like, let's do it. And so he funded the deal. We put it on the market the day after we closed, and about 30 days later, we made $80,000 and split it 50-50, my first check for
$40,000. Wow. Unbelievable. That's did you have any kind of training? How did you know how to, you know, just handle the paperwork of it and the legal part of it?
Well, I didn't, right? So, I mean, we basically wrote it out on a piece of paper, right? That I pulled. I mean, I remember pulling it out of the fax machine, that I had that was like also like a photocopier. And so I went back there, we wrote the purchase price, and then we just called up the local escrow title company. And I said, hey, we sent it over, and they just kind of handled the paperwork, and they drew up, you know, the escrow instructions. By the way, I do not recommend this. This was just my first deal, right? And
right.
So, you know, that's how it worked out. You asked me one of my biggest mistakes. I think we can come back to that, and I'll share that later on in the episode. But a couple of years went by. I continued to work in corporate America, and over time, I was doing, you know, started to do consistent deals consistently. And then at one point I decided that I didn't want to do this by myself. I wanted to free up my time. And so I started to expand the business through others and train people to meet with sellers and develop contacts where I could raise money and use my own money. And so our operation today is a little machine that we have that buys and sells single family houses. And then we have another division which goes after mobile home parks to buy and hold. And so that's what our business looks like today.
Wow. And when did you quit your full-time job?
So I quit my full-time job in late 2004, early 2005.
And went full-time into this, were you basically wholesaling at this point, or were you, I don't know, what would you call it? I mean, you know, you're kind of flipping, but you're not really doing rehab.
Sure. So, you know, I got really focused later in my career, right? But early in my career, I was doing everything that came my way, right? So I was doing a lot of lease options, and that's where you lease with the right to buy. And that was interesting because that kind of protected me through the crash a little bit. So I did a lot of leases with the option to buy. I did some wholesaling, and then I did some buy and holds during those first couple of years. And when I decided to bring on others, I simplified the business by moving primarily to wholesaling and then later learning that I should have held more into holding the single families and then the mobile home parks.
Got it. Well, you were working full time when you started hiring people, right? Or did you quit and then hire people?
Well, it's interesting because after I did my first deal, one of the things that I did not realize is that this business is completely dependent on the ability, number one, to generate leads, and number two, to convert those leads right into a signed contract, and then three, exit it for maximum profit, whether an exit is a buy and hold or whether you immediately and sell it for a big profit. And so those first couple of years after I'd done that deal, I didn't realize, or I wasn't aware, or I wasn't focused on what actually brought me that deal, right? And that was creating leads, right? Creating motion in this. And so I really floundered that first 2.5 years after that first deal. I got that quick win, and I had to have another moment where I said, hey, I got to kick this in to high gear when my wife got pregnant with my first child. And so I said, I'm going to make this happen. And so that's when I started marketing seriously. And then all of a sudden, wow, I wasn't floundering anymore. Once I really started marketing and generating those leads, I had a lot of deal flow coming my way.
But you were still full-time, right? Working full-time or no?
No. So once I started marketing heavy again, and I think I had done like 3 deals in 3 months, I just decided to quit my job and just go full-time.
Gotcha. And you were doing this by yourself for a while, and then decided to start to bring in other folks to kind of offload some of that responsibility.
Yeah. So back in right after I had, I think it was my third child, I was in bed with my wife, and I remember I slept in like an hour later than I normally do, and I looked at her and I said, I don't want to go to work today. Which was kind of interesting because I was, I was working for myself.
I know that experience.
And we knew that we wanted to have at least 4. And I was like, I've got to make a change. Right. And so that was the other moment where I said, this is, got a chance. So that's where I made the commitment to hire someone, and I hired my first sales rep, and his name was Brian. And long story short, when I hired Brian, he couldn't get 2 words out of his mouth. And so I remember we were in this for 6 or 7 weeks, and I'm thinking this isn't going to work. So it's interesting because I remember when I first got started, I couldn't get 2 words out of my mouth. And so I had a consultant come in who was kind of looking at my business, and he says, look, have you trained this guy? I was like, yeah, I'm training him. And right next to him, he's like, no, we've got to get what's out of your head into his head, right? We've got to get it on a paper and into his head. And so then we created the No Limit Selling System, and that's the sales training program that I used to train my people, and then that I've used to train others. And so we trained him on what was in my head. We flow charted it, we role played it. Long story short, 3 weeks after we did that, Brian got his first deal, and we made $40,000. And then, 5 days later, he locked up another one. And, a few days later, he locked up another one. And so Brian and I have made millions of dollars together. And then we went on to train, a bunch more sales reps. And that's kind of how the sales system was born.
Very cool. Wow. That's a great story. So your first person you hired basically was a salesperson, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. The first person I hired was a salesperson.
Now, what about the, finding the leads and building that funnel or whatever you might want to call it that to bring in those, those motivated sellers? How did you structure that? Or is that something that, you did early on, or is that something that kind of just evolved?
Sure. So once, ironically, I hired somebody, I'm thinking, wow, I've got to provide leads for this person, right? Whenever you're working with somebody, you've got to provide value, right? And so I knew that to put him in the best position possible, I needed to generate leads. So for me, by the way, if you're listening to this, you could generate leads, whether it's through joint venture partners or when you're working with someone who's younger. But for me at the time, I knew that I had the money to invest in leads. So that's what we did. And so we started off with direct mail, and we started mailing letters out to people in our target form area. I think to really succeeding in this business is to focus on one marketing channel and really, really go deep on that before moving on to the next. So we were all in on direct mail that first year. And so we sent out that first mailing campaign and sent it out every week for the first 90 days. And so, Brian took those phone calls. And at first, you know, he wasn't converting, but over time, a lot of those leads started to matriculate and mature. And those motivated sellers or those non-motivated sellers became motivated over time. Now, today, we use a combination of things, right? We use SMS texting. We use SEO, search engine optimization. We use pay-per-click advertising. And then we also do a lot of joint venture deals where people are out there finding their own deals and then bring them to us to either buy or we will wholesale those deals with them.
Gotcha. And your lists, the folks that you're marketing to, I don't assume you're still going down to the county recorder's office and sitting down with donuts. And what do you do now?
Sure. Well, we market to a multitude of lists, Bill. So one of those is we have a distress lists, right, which are the tax default. There's the code violations. And then we do utility shutoffs. And so those are three that we really, really like to focus on. They aren't terribly large. They are enough to do a significant amount of deals. So I would go and get those directly from the county. You can buy those from some third-party companies, and the data is okay, right? But if you really want the juicy deals, I get them directly from the county. And then for us, we love to target owner-occupied deals, 65 years of age and older, right? So there's a little less competition in that niche. And if you're patient and if you build a relationship, you're going to be able to get deals that other people are not, right? You can target non-owner-occupieds. I know that I'm a little bit of a renegade this way, but there's a lot of people targeting non-owner-occupied deals right now, and so you're going to be fighting with everybody else. And so we prefer to deal with the owner-occupied properties right now. And so you can use a lot of different services. Obviously, you can go directly to the county. You can go and pull a list from ListSource. That's one way that you can do it. And then there's some other software that if you buy it, you can pull it from there, like PropStream or FreedomStuff or something like that. But for us, I would definitely start the county and go from there.
Gotcha. And now, are you still focused in California, or are you have you broadened out to other states?
Sure. So for a residential operation, we do business in San Diego, and then we do business in South Florida. So those are our two markets. And so that is my recommendation. If you're listening to this, pick one market, max two, but preferably one, and then focus on that. And then we buy mobile home parks in both the Southwest and then the Southeast.
That's great. That's great. Now, the mobile home parks, you buy strictly as rental properties, right?
Yeah, we buy and hold those.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, this is fascinating. It's great. Have there been times when, and now you started in what, 2008 or when you first started doing this?
2002. So that was my first real estate deal.
2002. Okay, mm-hmm. So it was before the big recession.
Yep. 6051 Jacaranda Way.
Man, so did you remember that? It sticks with you. What happened when the recession came? Now that was, you're doing this. You got this system set up. It's growing. It's really happening. And then all of a sudden, boom! 2007, 2008. How did that impact you?
Well, you know, one of the things that my dad gave me that I saw is I saw him go through some ups and downs in business. And so one of the things that I saw my dad do that I learned from him, and he's like, hey, when stuff gets hairy or something goes wrong in the economy or the product or, you know, the environment that you're doing business with, you've got to stay level-headed and you've got to stay calm and focus on what's real and what's not. So I remembered that. And so, you know, I had a lot of lease options there where I was able to keep a level headed and renegotiate with sellers where appropriate. Some of them, you know, I was not, but I was able to not exercise those options. And then I had some rental properties that, you know, I was able to hold. I had a single family house. I remember in San Diego, my first house that I bought with my wife, I knew I was overpaying for it, right? In 2004, I remember paying $335 for it and it going down to $200,000.
Ouch.
Yeah. Ouch. But I knew that I knew that it would eventually come back, right? And so there's a saying that when there's blood in the streets, right, that's when you want to be buying. And if it's your own blood, right, that's especially when you need to be buying. And so it's interesting because I was upside down on this house and it was $200,000, but we found an amazing property that was in a much better zip code, which is the house that we're in now, that was in foreclosure. And long story short, we were able to move into that and capitalize on that and get into that property basically 40 cents on the dollar for the price then, right? And so it was this like putting your head down, staying focused. So even though I lost all this equity in this property, you know, I knew that I was in this great opportunity, right? And that I could feel bad for myself of the properties that I had or the equity that was gone, but I knew that actually that was the time to act, right? And so that's again where we started buying, and I bought our personal residence at just a smoking phenomenal deal. It's probably one of the best deals I've ever done, period. And so that's actually when I kicked it into high gear. So, you know, I knew that I was going to lose some of the equity, and that was the case, but I just kept going and I didn't panic. And I just kept taking action, generating leads and doing deals, and it worked out.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Looking at the mistakes we talked about referenced earlier, what would you say was one of those mistakes that you really learned from, or maybe there's multiple mistakes that really made a difference and you've learned and retuned your machine so that you're even more effective today?
Well, the first was after I'd done that first deal, right? I think I just kind of floundered for a couple of years and I really wasn't taking massive action. So that was the probably one of the biggest mistakes, is make sure that you are recording your activity every single week. The second is I wish I would have collaborated with others sooner. So there's a lot of talent out there. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of deals out there and other people have them. And so no matter where you are in your career, everything is right in front of you, right? If you have more money than time, right? Well, you could partner with someone who's really hungry and taking action and invest that money with them, right? If you don't want to manage property and you want to just invest your money, right? Well, then you could put your money in someone else's project or become a limited partner in, you know, an apartment building or a mobile home park. Or if you need talent and you're not really sure how to hire someone, you could always partner with someone in the short term. And so, you know, I think one of the biggest mistakes is I didn't see all of the resources that were available at my disposal, right? It was completely unlimited. And so if I knew then what I knew now, you know, I can't imagine how much money I've lost, right? But I'm glad that I know it now, right? The best time was yesterday. The second best time is today.
Right. And the collaborating, how did you start? I mean, you started working with family, obviously. You talked about, was it a brother-in-law? How did you sort of broaden out and start dealing with other investors?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things is at your local real estate clubs, right? They, you know, you're just there and a presence. And so people are going to just know who you are, right? And just start talking about the things that you're doing and, you know, brag about your deals, right? Brag about your deals. And people are going to want to be magnetized to that. And so I remember when I was in my early 30s, I realized that there was an unlimited amount of money at these real estate clubs, right? That more people there had money sitting in like a 401k or an IRA that they wanted to use, and that they didn't really have the desire to go out and find the deal. Or maybe they weren't going to, you know, they talked about it and they, you know, liked to hear about it, but they weren't, you know, when it came down to it, they were never actually going to pick up the phone and try to find motivated sellers. And so there was a lot more of those people in the real estate clubs than the ones who were actually going to take action. And so once I started having those conversations, the money available to me basically became unlimited.
Gotcha. That's great. Well, what would you say is sort of one of your biggest successes that you, that just really transformed your business?
There's a couple. I mean, number one would be working with other people, right? I mean, hiring acquisition specialists to work inside my company. That was probably the largest single move, because it opened my eyes to the power of working with other people, even if they weren't internal, right? So that was the first thing. The second thing is, obviously, we had someone, you know, who was just focused on mobile home parks. And so them finding deals was, you know, another. So the biggest thing was collaborating with others. Don't live in a vacuum. And so I know that built upon the last question, but this business is not meant to do alone. There's so much out there that if someone else has a skill or is willing to perform something that you're not, that was the biggest game changer for me.
Interesting. Gosh, I mean, it's a fascinating story. Just how you, again, it didn't have any kind of training or experience and just went in and did your first deal. But it sounds like now you've got a very well-oiled machine. How did you, in terms of your hires, the people that you brought in, now you talked about the first guy that you brought in as in a sales. So how did it go from there in terms of, and how did you know who to hire next?
Well, believe me, I've made a lot of mistakes, Bill. I made a lot of bad hires. it's interesting. The at first it was by, and don't copy this if you're listening to this, but at first it was, you know, a gut feel, right? Brian came to me through a referral, and that is, by the way, a great way to hire somebody. But you know, we ran ads, and you know, we hired a lot of bad people, and so I joined Entrepreneurs Organization. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of it. But they are really big on this book called Scaling Up. And there's a little brother to that book called Traction.
Oh, yeah. And, familiar with Traction. Yeah.
Gino Wickham. Gino Wickham. But basically, what this is it's a system of simple disciplines that if you apply them to almost anything, right, you're going to see growth. And so it measures, you know, okay, who are we, right? Who am I? What do I stand for? And who do I want to be around? And I, you know, when I first read the book, I'm like, okay, let's get past these pages, right? This is not the meaty stuff. But I realize it's the most important thing. And so for us, one of our core values is batteries included, right? Is that if you come to work with us, you have to have your own batteries. I should not need to motivate you. I don't want to teach you how to bust through a barrier when you get stuck. Right? You should want to wake up and go to work every day and do your best. And so that's one of our core values. And so defining that and understanding that, you know, it really started to attract that. And so, you know, we have five of them, right? One of them is next level. What got us here, what is not what's going to get us there. And so we're always innovating now. And so now when we have a job ad, we write down the job ad, we put our core values in there, and we try to repel people who think, wow, this is going to be a lot of work. Right. Someone who's looking at this and thinking, oh, these guys are over the top, you know, I'm out of here. And so now when we post that, we attract people to our core values, and they say, hey, I love that. And that's how we begin the interview process. And then spending that time, we really, really, really take our time getting to know somebody and looking at their job history. I can tell you that you are not going to save anybody when you want to hire somebody. What I mean by save anyone is that you're not going to take someone who has not been successful before in any area of their life, and then all of a sudden turn them into a rock star to come work for you. That's not, in my experience, and if you look back in Traction, people are the exact opposite of stocks, in that past performance is absolutely predictive of future results.
great. Yeah. Did you continue to hire salespeople, or did you start to, you know, you mentioned an acquisitions person. How did you know sort of where to go?
Well, I didn't, but I think, you know, back then, right, I think it goes back to your current strengths and where you're at, you know. So from, you know, the next thing, we hired an assistant in the office to handle all the paperwork and the closings. And, you know, that assistant makes sure that we weren't writing up purchase contracts on fax machine paper, you know? And so, you know, I think that if you're doing any kind of volume, you're definitely going to need a strong admin behind you. And so, you know, you've got an acquisitions person with you. And so then we, you know, after we had the acquisitions person and then the admin, then we hired a couple more acquisition people. And, you know, we had a couple successes, we had, you know, more failures, and then we kept going and hiring until we found the ones that stuck. Now, because we've been through it and we take our time, we're really thorough, we know who we are, we know who we want to attract. you know, we have close to a 90% success rate when we're hiring a new acquisition specialist.
That's great. That's great. Well, you know, our audience are folks that are 50 years of age or older, and you know, they're looking at real estate investing as a means to either supplement their current retirement, or maybe they're trying to, you know, maybe look at something that they're going to do after they retire, that, you know, that'll be something that will be kind of fun for them to do, but at the same time build up you know, a legacy that they can hand down to their children. What's the advice you'd have for those folks? It sounds like you talked to a lot of, you know, baby boomers. What kind of advice would you have for them in getting started in real estate?
Well, my first advice to those of you who are listening, who are in that position, I think it's good to realistically decide what you want to do and what you realistically will do. And so when you're in your retirement years, you know, do you want to just move some of your own money and, you know, get a return for that money? Or do you want to get in the trenches and find deals? Or do you want to be a connector, right? And connect that. And so it's really, really exciting because when I was young, I had to overcome my age, right? I remember, you know, not everyone took me seriously, but if you're older, it's kind of interesting, right? There's an implied wisdom that you have. And so you can kind of take your pick on what you want to do. And so if you decide that you want to be a connector, you can, you know, go to real estate clubs or, you know, be on podcasts and connect, you know, these young, hungry people going out and finding deals. And you could also be connected with people who have the money, right? And you could actually get equity and cash flow for putting those people together and doing deals, right? So I've done a lot of deals where I have found the deal and I have found the money and I've maintained equity and cash flow just by putting the deals together, right? So that's a great way to do business. So that's, you know, one suggestion. The other part is, you know, if you just want nothing to do with that, and is you could partner with someone who's got a project like a mobile home park and just put your money in and say, hey, I want a great return on this, you know, or if you want, you know, I think this goes back to, you know, you're thinking that you want to be more involved. Well, great. You know, pick up the phone, buy the sales system, and go do some deals. Lock them up. So, I think it's where you want to go and what you want to do in your retirement years, Bill.
Right. Is it labor intensive in terms of you know, trying to generate you know, the deals that you know, trying to go through, you know, a lot of leads or generate the leads? You know, so I, you know, that'd be a question I'm sure a lot of folks would ask.
Sure. So if you're the person generating the leads and answering the phone, absolutely labor intensive. Absolutely labor. Now, the dollar per hour is through the roof, right? But it's labor intensive. You know, so you have a lot of people who are one-man shows, you know, going out there and they are on the phone and they're generating, you know, between $250,000 and $500,000 a year, just wholesaling properties, right? And they're a one-man show doing that, but they're working at it. So that part is labor intensive. If you're the one connecting, it's a little less labor intensive, right? You're using your knowledge and your wisdom to put deals together.
Gotcha. And if you're active, are there outsourcing options there? For example, you know, maybe, you know, somebody you could outsource getting the leads to you, for example. Is that common, or do you not recommend that?
You know, you can hire services that will cold call for you. Starting out, I don't recommend that. I think that if you're going to, because you're still going to be the one who's going to be closing the deal, right? And so I recommend starting out and doing that yourself for a period of time. And then if you want to outsource it later. I see a lot of people try to do that from the get-go. And it just doesn't work out.
Okay. That's good advice, because you would know firsthand. Well, you've got this business. It sounds fantastic, or multiple businesses here. What excites you about the future of your company, where do you sort of see it going?
Well, one of the things I've gotten really passionate about the last 2 years is developing leaders inside of my organization. So at first, when I hired those first few people, I had a bunch of followers, right? It was like Todd Toback, you know, I'm the genius, and then I have a bunch of helpers. And I could tell you that that will only get you so far, and it's not nearly as fulfilling as then taking the people around you and then grooming them for leadership, which is really fun for me, right? Because you get to see them really, really grow alongside you. And John Maxwell, who's a leadership expert, says, you know, you want to stand on the shoulders of giants, right? And so I love pouring into, you know, my people and giving them opportunity to hire and train other people to get one level above that. So I really, really love that. You know, I love doing big deals with people around me. So I love the mobile home park aspect and our team, you know, having equity, and then our investors who have equity in that. I just love winning with other people, right? This is probably the second phase of my investing career. I just love winning with other people, right? And hitting a big home run and seeing that grow. So that's really, really fun for me.
That's neat. Do you see yourself, you know, maybe, I don't know how much time you put into it now, but, you know, where you can step back a little bit and, you know, maybe as you get near retirement age, maybe, but where you might want to, you know, basically create this machine that will operate on itself, and that you can, you know, come and go as you please, and maybe travel, whatever.
You know, right now I work about 20 hours a week as it is. So I've got a lot of free time on my hands, but I always tell people, I had a great coach named Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach. And, you know, one of the things that he taught me was that, you know, there's no rush to retirement, meaning that if you are like going to get to this point, first of all, you may never get there, right? And which is a hard reality sometimes to even, you know, for me to even accept. But that, you know, a lot of the things that we want to do, we can do now, right? And so I was talking to this young kid in my office who's got a business, and he's like, I can't wait until I can go surfing, you know, every day and, you know, be free. And, you know, he's working pretty hard. And I'm like, hey, listen, you know, you can go surfing every single morning, right? Like, why don't you get up early? Go down there, go surfing, right? Block off that time, make it a non-negotiable, grab a breakfast burrito, and then come into the office at 9:30. Like, why can't we do that now? You know, doing that for me, scheduling that stuff to be really, you know, my priorities now has enabled me actually to extend my desire to work indefinitely, because I can do all the things that I want to do now, right? Just by being, you know, better with my time. Right, the vacations that I want to go on, I schedule them and I prepare for them, and I understand that I've got to delegate properly to do that. And so I don't want, you know, forever never to come, and so I want forever now. And so I block those things in now, and I plan on working for the foreseeable future.
That's great. Well, we have time is kind of zipping by here on us, and I want to respect your time. We have. A session that we call Wrap It Up, where I ask you a series of quick questions, sort of like a lightning round, and you answer as you can provide, you know, resources for our listeners that they may not have heard about or that might be of help to them. Are you ready to wrap it up?
I am ready.
All right. First question, favorite real estate book?
Oh, I'm going to give you two. They're not real estate books, but you got to read them. And I know I'm cheating here, but the Slight Edge by Jeff Olson and 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth. You're going to love them both.
Oh, great. Great. Favorite just general business book?
Has to be Traction by Juno Wickham.
Yeah. Great book. I love that book. How about most valuable website for success other than your own that you use that really has been invaluable for you in growing your business?
Website. Man, that's a tough one. It's with apps and everything that goes along. I'm going to pass on that one, Bill.
Okay. No, that's no problem. You can do it. So how about favorite app?
Favorite app is going to be something called Productive App. Productive App, what it does is that it measures your habits. And so you put in your 6 or 7 or 8 apps and you could build one day on top of the other. And so you got to download the Productive App. A lot of people can't find it, so I'll send you a screenshot, Bill, if you want to put it for your website, but you got to get it.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, please send that. That's good. It's the first time I've heard of that one. How about a favorite quote?
You cannot fix what you won't face.
Good one. Well, here's our final question here. If you lost absolutely everything, all your assets, and you, knowing what you already know, if you had to start all over again and you only had $1,000, what would you do with that $1,000 to relaunch your real estate investing business?
Great question. I would go to one of the real estate clubs. I'd find some young, hungry wholesalers who have some deals, and I would either partner with them on their deals, or I would take their deals and I would then partner with somebody else at the club who had money, and I would put the deal together and take some equity and cash flow in the deal.
Ah, very creative. Great. Wow. Well, gosh, this has been awesome. I'm sure there's a lot of folks that are listening that would love to be able to contact you or find out more about what you do. What's the best way for folks to do that?
Well, I encourage everyone to check out the No Limits Real Estate Investing podcast. So that's my podcast, No Limits Real Estate Investing.com, the No Limits Real Estate Investing podcast. And then if they want to know more, they can also go to our website, No Limits Real Estate Investing.com.
Great. Great. Well, we have a tradition here for all of our guests that, you know, we're called the Old Dogs REI Network. And so we'd like if you could close us out with your best old hound dog howl. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
Now, it's interesting because I've got some coworkers working next to me, so I would have been a lot more aggressive, but hopefully I was able to put enough umph in there for you.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a strong one. My sound meter was kind of going into the red. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Todd, for being on. It was a great show.
Thank you so much, Bill.
I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, everything presented here today by Todd can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs REI Network website, and that's at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog, and you're going to look for the episode with Todd Toback. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.